You are tuned to WEHC Emory and WISE FM Wise. I'm Leanne Hunter, live in studio. We are broadcasting from the campus of Emory and Henry, and I'm here to welcome you to our local programming. It is 1 o'clock on Tuesday, April 2nd, and that means it is time for Come to the Table with Zach Holt. And he is here in studio with Ricky. And if you've got questions for them, please do call the station at 276-944-6933. Now here is your host, Zach Holt.
Well, hello, friend. I'm so glad you're here. My name is Zach Holt, and this is Come to the Table. Some of our most intimate conversations happen at the kitchen table. Our walls crumble as space is created to know one another more deeply. Our hurt and our heartache are replaced by hope and healing when we pull up a chair, let down our guard, and simply be who we are, where we are. In our time together, we will step into the shoes of others through recovery stories of redemption, offer resources and connections for those in need, and come together as a community starving for revival of our region. If you're hungry, you've come to the right place. Well, guys, I always look forward to being here on the first Tuesday of every month, spending an hour in the studio with my buddy Ricky Mills.
Hey.
And so, yeah, we've given you the number already, but again, it's 276-944-6933. So the hope of the first episode of every month is just to create an opportunity for folks to share their struggles, share questions that they're wrestling with, issues related to their recovery that they're really having a hard time kind of navigating through on their own. And what I have found is that usually if you have a question, somebody else has it secretly. And so boldness begets more boldness. And so we just encourage you guys to reach out as you feel led if there's an issue that you're dealing with or just something that you want to share and celebrate. I think those are equally as important for folks that are listening to hear, again, those stories of redemption and things that are noteworthy and praiseworthy. And so, yeah, so today we're here in the studio. And Ricky, what's been going on with you lately?
My recovery is looking real good. A lot of responsibility that I didn't have, and the thing that I like about it is that I'm taking care of my responsibilities, making doctor's appointments. I just got an apartment.
Yeah,
in Castle, you know, so. My responsibilities is coming back, and my awareness is up. Mm-hmm. And even when difficulty come my way, I'm able to focus and handle my business.
Yeah. So a lot of times when people, because we got a couple guys that are getting ready to graduate from our year-long program, and it seems like that, you know, when guys are going through a season of transition, when there's like a big shift that's happening. It can be a kind of a scary time. It can be like a potentially, you know, kind of can be a dangerous situation. What are, you know, you said your guard is up. What are kind of some of the things that you would watch for? Like what would be the smoke signals, I guess, or the red flags that would say, you know, hey, I need to lean in, or I need to reach out, or I need to take inventory. What would be some of those things that you would watch for?
Putting things before my recovery.
Mm-hmm.
When you know, it get busy sometimes, and you know, you always think about your finances and different things that you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But to stay focused on my high power and my recovery is what keep me grounded, and you know, keep me aware. You know that I gotta remember where I started doing this at, you know, instead of just working and trying to save money, I still got to stay in the community. I got to stay connected. So, yeah.
Absolutely. And I think there is a temptation. One of the things that, you know, we have time this morning or this afternoon, I guess it is, to talk a little bit about the balance between busyness and rest. Because it is so easy to get swept up and caught up in checking all the boxes and doing all the things that you can miss out on what matters most. You know, you can miss out on the very thing The very things that got you to where you are often the very first things we trim as we're trying to step forward, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's like the things that at one time were like a huge priority in our lives in the very beginning, often are the very first couple of things that you begin to trim and you begin to cut out. And I noticed for me, like about a year and a half into my recovery, I stopped like journaling every day. And I stopped, you know, doing some of like the daily disciplines and things like that. And before long, I realized, whoa, I feel like way off track because I've allowed other things to matter more than what matters most. Mm-hmm. And so what are some of those, you mentioned community, what are some of the other disciplines and rhythms that have got you where you are that you don't want to let go of now that you're stepping into your own space?
Like I say, staying connected with like the ministry, the people in the ministry, because I know a lot of people stepped forward and helped me when I was going through different obstacles, you know. And so I got a twist, right?
A twist.
I was sitting at my kitchen table, right?
There you go.
And I was thinking, and you always asking me questions. Mm-hmm. And if anybody out there would help me out, I would appreciate if you call in and help me out with these questions I got for Zach this week. My first question to you would be, what's the definition of recovery?
Definition of recovery, man, that's good. Yeah, man, I think recovery is about abstinence, but it's also about engagement. I think that it is equally as much what you don't do as it is what you do. So what I mean by that is, yeah, obviously a big part of recovery is like, I don't use methamphetamine and heroin anymore. Like I gotta abstain from that. I've got to abstain from toxic relationships that are gonna pull me down. Gotta abstain from selfishness. And then abstain, like sometimes I've just got to stop doing, you know, that sometimes it's a lot of recovery is just becoming something different. And so my faith perspective is that what you behold is what you become. And so as I take space and time, to reflect on my understanding of God, then I become more God focused in the rhythms of my life. And so sometimes it's the stopping and contemplating and reflecting and meditating. So it's those abstinence pieces. But then it's also, I think recovery is also about engagement. It's about being part of a community of people that are chasing after the same things. I think it's sharing your stories with other people who are now where you once were. I think it's in the engagement that you see how the broken pieces of your past can build a bridge to people who are feeling a million miles apart from God and everybody else in their isolation. And so I think recovery is about both abstinence and engagement. And so I think it's a lot of times when people think about recovery, they think of just stop using. But it's not just stopping using, it's starting a whole new way of life.
Big picture.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What do you think about that?
Makes sense. It's a lot of, you know, people got a lot of definitions of recovery, what they think about it. Mm-hmm. And staying engaged is very important, you know. Staying connected. Okay, my next question to you is, What principles made a difference in your recovery?
What principles made a difference? Yeah, so my first sponsor, he was, I called him probably the first day I called him every single day for the first year of my recovery. And every single day, our conversations would pretty much go the same way. I would dump on him something that I was stressing about, angry about, upset about, anxious about, and he would always tell me, he said, if you are disturbed, anxious, or upset, there's something wrong with me. And so one of the most powerful lessons I learned is that whenever I'm experiencing anxiety, anger, frustration, hurt, whatever, I have to examine myself. You know, yeah. I've got to look inward. And I never wanted to look in the mirror. I never wanted to look at the problem. And as I say all the time, you can't defeat what you don't define. And so I was trying to fight something that wasn't actually the issue. You know, I can't control what people do, but I can control my response and my reaction to that. You know, I can't control what people say, but I can control how I let that affect me. I'm only in control of my attitude and my actions. And so that was a huge lesson was for me to look within whenever I feel myself feeling some kind of way, to stop and examine, okay, what's really going on. This week I'm doing a lot of yard work and I'm getting so frustrated with these weeds. I keep pulling them and they keep coming back and it's like, I pull the top and I'll spray them, but it's like, there's this root structure underneath, the soil that is so fortified and strong. This network of roots that just keeps going and going. And so I dig up half the bed and I still haven't even gotten all the roots. And so for me, I think recovery, that's a big lesson in itself, is that, you know, you can't just pull a weed here or there. If you don't get the entirety of the root system that's driving the unwanted growth in your life, then it's just going to continue to repeat itself. You know, you're just going to see it over and over and over again. And you may do some damage control, you know, you may spray it. But again, if you don't get to the root cause of what's producing that unwanted thing in your life, then it's just going to continue manifesting in different forms. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's been another tool through the working of the 12 steps and the inventory process, you know, sharing my story, confessing to another person, the exact nature of my wrongs, things like that, that have helped me to really go down deep, you know, and examine within what's going on. So I think for me, my first year of recovery was a lot of learning about my stuff, my side of the street that I had to get clean. And then out of that place of healing and wholeness and practices and tools, then the second year of my recovery began to open up towards others. You know, and because we say, if you want to keep it, you got to give it away. So it was like the first year was getting myself healthy, getting myself whole, learning the tools, rhythms, disciplines, all that stuff. And then the second year was starting to give it away. And I've kind of been in that rhythm of my first year and second year ever since, where I'm always kind of looking in and then pushing out and then looking in and pushing out.
Okay. I feel you, because they say, I mean, I felt like when I was in my active addiction, in the circle that I was running in, mm-hmm. I was always on the defense.
Mm-hmm.
And I ain't never look at the part I played.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always had an excuse for me,
mm-hmm.
you know, but everybody else was wrong. So now I look at myself, mm-hmm. and see what part I play.
Mm-hmm.
And I look in that mirror and deal with myself.
Yeah. Okay. And I think it's like, it's not that we're just looking in the mirror to identify the bad, you know, because I think sometimes you need to stop and, you know, if we're all created in the image of God, like we all got some beauty in us,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And so sometimes just to, you know, gaze in that mirror, so to speak, and, you know, call out the value and the worth that you have, you know, in yourself and in your own life. You know, because I think it's too easy just to look at all the negative stuff and look at all that's going wrong, all the mistakes that I've made, and miss out on, you know, on the beautiful things that God is doing now, you know. So I think look for the bad, but also, you know, you search out the good and you call that out, you know, you name out those affirmations like, you know what, I'm not where I used to be, you know, I've got a confidence today, I've got this going, I've got that going, I've got an apartment, you know, all the things.
Yeah. I think he put people in your path to let you know that, mm-hmm. you know, that what's the four letters you say that's so
funny.
Important?
I was just thinking, I see in you. Yeah, the most powerful four letters, I see in you. Yeah.
He put people in your path to let you know what they see in you.
Yeah.
And the good that you do.
Yeah.
Hope is the pathway to recovery,
mm-hmm.
right? What is the pathway to hope?
Okay. Say that one more time. As we getting deep now at 1:15.
And if anybody got some more questions, because I'm running out, I did good. Hope is the pathway to recovery. What is the pathway to hope?
Hope is the pathway to recovery. What is the pathway to hope? Yeah. You know, something I read a lot, and he says that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance character, and character hope. And so I think he would say that there's no right understanding of the hope that we have without first experiencing some suffering. And so when I'm in the depth of my suffering, I look forward because I believe that there's hope even in the midst of the most broken situation. And so I believe that in my struggles, in my suffering, I find myself asking, you know, not why is this happening, but how am I growing? Like, God, how are you using this awful situation? How are you using this tragedy, this trauma, this lament, this pain, this brokenness? How are you using this to build me up? And in the midst of that, I somehow hear a whisper of hope that leads me. And as I persist in the suffering, I'm built up because of it. I persevere, I endure. And then through the production of that endurance, I develop character. And then out of that character comes a hope that endures. But so for me, I think it's kind of a progression that, you know, a lot of times the strongest recoveries are the ones that went through the most suffering. You know, and when you've suffered much, I think your recovery means that much more to you because you know the darkness that you've been through. And so the hope seems that much brighter when you're able to stand into it.
You know what's back there, right?
Yeah.
You know what's back there. It get real dark back there. I know in my recovery it got real dark.
Yeah.
And I know that's not where I'm trying to go back to.
Yeah. Well, it helps when you can see it, too. You called me the other morning and told me about Spider-Man sitting on the front stoop of the the side of the road in a Spider-Man costume. At 15.
The whole Spider-Man suit. I mean, and I had to make two U-turns to make sure that I thought it was a statue, but it was a real person. Yeah, man, it get real deep and dark. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, me myself, mm-hmm. had to figure out what trauma was,
mm-hmm.
right? Because in my addiction, I seen so many things happen, and it became like, I was like immune to it,
mm-hmm.
right? So I didn't understand what the trauma that I experienced mm-hmm. had to do mm-hmm. with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do you feel trauma is?
Yeah. Well, I think trauma is relative. I think a traumatic event for one person may not be for another. I believe that we all go through trauma and that we are deeply formed by the trauma that we experience, whether that's neglect or abandonment, you know, those kinds of things. So it doesn't always have to be like physical trauma. Several weeks ago when we interviewed Krista shared about an event that happened when she was touring in Afghanistan, and you know, an IED went off and, you know, caused an incredible amount of trauma. Those near-death experiences in Iraq were, you know, a lot of trauma. And so, again, I think if we're just focusing on, you know, behavior modification and we're working on, you know, trying really hard, but we're neglecting the trauma that's underneath, you know, that ignorance of our trauma doesn't make it better, it makes it bigger. That it grows in power and influence in our lives the more we pretend like it's not really a thing. And so that's one of the really valuable things about recovery is the way in which we have spaces to bring that trauma out into the light. It's, you know, when sunlight transforms things, you know, and when you keep it in the dark, again, it doesn't get better, it gets bigger. But when you expose it to the sunlight, when you expose it to the love, God, love of another, something about bringing it out into the open diminishes the power and the hold that it has in your life. So I think a lot of people, another thing I'll say in trauma is that it really is amazing to me how trauma can be repurposed for the triumph of another. So like recently was in a situation where there was a girl who had been abused in just really awful ways, and so connected her with another person who had come through trauma, where she too had been abused and assaulted in some really awful ways. And it doesn't make it all better, you know, but it helps to have someone else who's kind of walked through that before, is a little bit further down the road. There's a part that says, let us comfort one another with the comfort we ourselves have received. And so there's something almost like a, I don't know, an obligation that when you've been comforted through something like trauma, abuse, neglect, whatever, that you're open and you're willing, you know, to want to share that with other people who are now where you once were. So I think that's kind of how trauma is redeemed, is whenever you're able to leverage it for the growth and for the good of another. I keep trying to get Danny Thompson to come on. He's the chaplain at the jail in Abingdon Regional, and he does all kind of martial arts and stuff like that. And I think one of them is Aikido, and another one is Judo. And Judo is really interesting because it's the Japanese or whatever, it translates to the gentle way. And it's like one of the only purely defensive martial arts. And the kind of the foundation of it is you're leveraging the enemy's momentum to create tactical advantage against him. So it's actually that the attack of the enemy that is repurposed for the creation of leverage and tactical advantage to win or to claim, you know, victory in that. And so it's like when you look at some of these things that are coming against us, you know, the pain of trauma, you know, that tries to keep us, you know, beat down and silenced, and just kind of sitting in that, how sometimes you can create an advantage over that trauma, over that pain, in a gentle way by extending the comfort that you receive into life of another, or finding community, finding fellowship. And when I think about my recovery and just the viciousness of it and all the pain that I went through, it's not all gone now. Like, it's not like it was absent from my memory. Like, I can still remember what all that was like, but it's like by extending the comfort I receive to others, by sharing my story with others, then it kind of redeems that, and it makes it, you know, I still have a scar from it, just like I have a scar from my surgery. I had a rock climbing accident, so my whole side is like this giant scar on my rib cage, and I've healed from the incident. You know, physically, emotionally, spiritually, I've healed from it, but I still have a reminder of it. You know, I still have that scar, you know, and I look in the mirror and like, I think the scars we have are like kind of beautiful, you know, because even though we may be healed from something, they're reminders that, you know what, I'm an overcomer, you know? So the days when I feel like weak, like I can't take another step, I, you know, look at the scars and I'm like, yeah, you know what? I've been through some things and I'm still standing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Beautiful, man. I'm not surprised at the answers that I got. You know, that's why I stay close to you. My trauma at one time had me not being a very understanding person. Mm-hmm. You know, what I see somebody go through, and I look at how I would deal with it or whatever, mm-hmm. and think that it's not that bad. But now that I've been in recovery for a while, it's like my feelings for others allows me to look deeper into the way they feel, mm-hmm. you know, and I can't compare the way they deal with trauma the way I deal with trauma. You know, somebody can't take the loss of a loved mm-hmm. one the way that I do,
mm-hmm.
you know.
So how do you walk if somebody's going through a trauma that you've never experienced before? How do you connect with them, and how do you relate to them? Because, like, we have, like, a lot of people that come beside and are, you know, they, like, maybe we believe in what you guys are doing in the recovery community, but, like, I've never walked through that. How can I help someone who's been in addiction if I've never been in addiction? Or how can I be there to support someone who's walking through, you know, a season where they're unhoused if I've never been homeless? Like, how do you do that?
I think the first thing would be to take the time out and pay attention. Mm-hmm. listen to them, mm-hmm. you know, take time out for them, show them that.
If you hold, you get a question for that?
Okay,
hang on, then I'll get you
to. Hold on, I think we got a question.
Caller, you are on air.
Do we have you here? Hello?
Fiction.
Yeah,
hey,
I hear you now.
Doing? Hey, how you doing?
Doing good, doing good. Thanks for calling in. How are you doing today?
I'm good. I just wanted to introduce my group that I'll be doing tonight.
Awesome. Yeah, tell us about it.
Yeah, it's Living Beyond Addiction Christian Recovery, and it'll be from 6 to 7 every Tuesday at Rosedale Baptist Church in Abingdon.
That's awesome.
And it's just a recovery group centered around Christ, and I wanted to invite others to come and experience it.
That's really awesome. So every Tuesday from 6 to 7 at Rosedale Baptist Church, Living Beyond Addiction.
Yes.
I love it. And what are some of the things folks could expect if they are able to make it out to your group?
Just working through our heart problem that we're all just kind of lost and need to be guided back to centeredness, I guess, you know, just bringing us back to God.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, that's good. It's funny that's what you said, because we were just talking about a little bit ago. I was talking about weeding the garden and how I feel like I'm just chasing my tail, which
right.
is my dog's favorite activity, by the way. I watched Bo chase his tail for like 10 minutes straight this morning. I was like, where do you get this energy? Also, if anybody needs a golden doodle, my wife and I are almost to that point. So,
but no,
it is, man. It's getting back to the root of it. You know, it's getting back to the heart problem, you know, and identifying
yeah.
that. And so, well, man, we're really, really excited for you, Jared. We'll have to have you come back on and do another interview once you get things up and running. But every Tuesday night, Rosedale Baptist Church, 6 p.m., Living Beyond Addiction.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, man, we're super excited for you. I'm trying to work some magic and be there myself. So
all
hopefully
right.
I'll be able to see you tonight, man. But we really appreciate
awesome.
You calling in, and you know, it's really, really, really cool what you're doing. So
thanks for the work you're doing.
Yeah, man. Yeah, we're excited for you. That's Ricky. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for the work.
Hey, Ricky.
All right, Jerry. We'll talk to you soon, man.
All right.
That's cool. He was he came through. He was like number five, patient number five, resident number five at Risk Lifestyle Recovery.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. Way back when we finally opened it up, and it's been really cool to kind of work with him through the years, and just amazing.
Yeah, man.
It's amazing what happens. And you know, that's the difference maker is you know, is those who are engaged in giving it back. You know, that it's almost like you asked me a definition of recovery, whatever the opposite of selfishness is, selflessness. Yeah. Yeah. So selflessness, I think, is a life of recovery, because, you know, you see that, you know, I spent so much of my life taking, you know, and that the life of recovery is one that offers, you know, yeah. one that gives to others.
But like he was asking me about dealing with somebody's trauma that you never mm-hmm. went through.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, to show somebody that you care, to take time mm-hmm. out and listen. Sometimes they're not looking for answers, you know. Mm-hmm. I feel like if a person can... If you can talk to somebody, mm-hmm. instead of trying to tell them what to do, mm-hmm. let them figure it out, they're more acceptable mm-hmm. to their plan, mm-hmm. you know? And you know, lend that ear mm-hmm. and that support.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's what do it for me. Mm-hmm. When I just know that somebody's in my corner mm-hmm. and if I need to turn there, that mm-hmm. I can call.
Yeah.
And that's why I try to support and try to give back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, because it's keeping me.
Keeps you on track.
Yeah, keep me on track. Yeah.
And sometimes people, you're right, man. Sometimes people aren't looking for an answer. You know, they're not looking for a sermon, or they're not looking for, you know, 3 points to a better life, you know. And my wife teaches me a lot of things. And one of those things is, you know, sometimes she's not looking for a solution. You know, she'll come with a problem. And you know, I mean, I fix people's personal, you know, that's kind of my wheelhouse. And so to kind of come into a conversation, you know, without, oh, I can fix that. You know, here's 3 ways, here's 3 points, you know? And so sometimes just to listen and be present, you know, because some people, you know, kind of process verbally as they're opening up and as they're sharing, you know, stuff comes out, you know, as you just give people space, you know, to be heard. And like we say in our opening introduction, just pull up a chair, let down your guard, and just be who you are, where you are. And I think sometimes that really goes a long way, because people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care, you know. Okay. And just the demonstration of that love, like, look, I'm, you know, sometimes people need to figure out, you know, their own stuff that they're wrestling through. And that's one of the tensions, you know, in our work is, okay, like, is my job to do everything for you? Is my job to fix your life? Is my job to continuously put out the fires? Like, is that my role? Or is it, you know, that of, you know, kind of a mechanic at a pit stop, you know, when you pull over and you need to retool and you need some inflation in tires, you need some gas, or, you know, whatever it is, and then get you back on the road. And so I think earlier in our history of the work that we do, I think I was way too involved and invested, I think, in trying to do things for people. And I learned that doesn't really help people in the long term. Like, people need that. They need that tension, right? And they need that struggle so that they can be successful. I heard somebody talking about how, you know, a caterpillar is born and then goes into the cocoon or the pupa. And then when they come out, there's actually this step in that process where I think they come out with like this covering or this casing that's on top of them as they emerge from the cocoon. And so they have to like break through that casing, or membrane or whatever it is that's around them. They break through that, and then they, you know, it flies off or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so there was a scientist that like made the mistake of trying to assist that process, and kind of aid the butterfly in shedding itself of that stuff that is around them when they emerge from the cocoon. And the butterfly actually isn't able to fly. So there's a part of that process where the butterfly has to do that on his own so that he can be strong enough to emerge and to fly. So there's some times when we kind of help people take shortcuts that really aren't the best thing for them.
Hey, guys, I think we've got a caller here. Caller, you are live on air.
Hi, I was just curious, what kind of events do you do in the neighborhoods that you guys are ministering in?
Oh, that's a great idea. Community events. Yeah. So this past Saturday, we had an Easter egg hunt down in Rice Terrace and in Bristol. And I think how many folks do you think we fed, Ricky?
Oh, it's always over like 100.
Yeah. Well, we had 150 hot dogs and 50 hamburgers and a whole bunch of stuff. And so we had an inflatable for the kids and Easter eggs, whole bunch of Easter eggs. And so we do things periodically like that at the Boys and Girls Club down in Rice Terrace. We typically will do end of school bash and a back to school bash. I think the kids are more excited about the end of school bash than the back to school bash. But I think the beginning school bash, I think it softens the blow of having to start another year. But yeah, we really love getting to be a blessing to the kids in Rice Terrace, getting to feed our neighbors and just to be present with them. So our community events kind of on a big scale look like that. But something that some people may not necessarily be aware of is that like over the first quarter, like so over the first 3 months of 2024, we actually fed 2,250 meals. So in just a few short months with a very, very small kind of humble ministry, to be able to feed that many people is really cool. And then that's spread out, not just at the Boys and Girls Club on Sunday nights where we normally meet at 5:30 and serve a meal, but across the Salvation Army, you know, the Gray House, the, where else are we at, Ricky?
We're everywhere.
Jails.
The library, the jails,
yeah.
The parks.
Yeah.
Wherever the broken is,
yeah,
that's where we go.
Try and step into it. Yeah, yeah. So we like to eat, and so we try and bless people that way. So yeah, lots of different community events that way. There is a basketball camp that we're going to do Saturday, April the 13th, from 10 until 1. So if anybody's listening and has questions about that, they can email us at thetablebristol117@gmail.com. And so, to answer your question, we have lots of community stuff that we're involved with. And if anybody has questions, they can always reach out to us at thetablebristol117@gmail.com.
And I would recommend to come to the Boys and Girls Club Sunday at 5:30.
Yeah.
And I think that'll be a good place to start.
Yeah. Yeah. Get to kind of see how it all moves and flows.
Thank you. How would I be able to partner and help?
Oh, that's also a great question. How could you partner and help? Yeah, well, there are a few ways. Folks can go to thetableministries.com, and there's both a connect form that, you know, you can kind of share a little bit of information and a way that, you know, you might like to get involved, and we can try and link you up that way. There's also a giving tab within that website. So folks want to contribute in that manner, but we're always taking donations pretty much around the clock for, you know, like hygiene products. So we can always use bath and body stuff. We can always use, what else we give away, Ricky? Toothpaste, toothbrush,
towels, washcloths, gloves, socks.
Yeah. All those kinds of things. I know right now we need two tents. So if anybody's listening and wants to help us out with two tents, some folks that
sleeping
need that.
Sleeping bags.
Yeah, yeah. So there's material things in that way that we can always use. You know, if anybody's ever just like, hey, I want to fix some brownies and just, you know, give them to them, we'll take care of those for you too. So, but seriously, and another way that is I think probably the most impactful is for just to come and just, you know, sit down at the Salvation Army with us on a Tuesday night, or the Boys and Girls Club with us on a Sunday night, and just open up and just ask people questions and just let them have some space to share their struggle and what they're wrestling through. And I think that is something that money can't buy, is the ministry of presence and just being with people. Shortly, a little bit ago, Ricky and I were talking about, you know, the power of our stories. Like, even if I can't relate to something that Ricky's been through, you know, if I just listen to him share his story, it kind of softens my heart towards that. Ricky, know I care. And so then things kind of go in a beautiful way like that. So folks that just want to come and just sit at a table with folks, and just listen to their stories. Like I said, I think that's something money can't buy that makes just a tremendous impact.
Yeah, every time I see it, whoever come to share, that they be really comfortable,
mm-hmm.
and they be glad that they came.
Yeah. Well, when you think about, you know, some of our friends, Steve that comes to 117 and John that comes to the table, and our context is not their context, but they came with that posture that I just want to listen, you know, and I just want to hear their stories and just be a part of it. And, you know, now they're family, family, you know, Steve's having guys over at his house to, you know, teach them how to cook brownies and, you know, just work through finances and develop a budget and all those kinds of things. And so, just showing up, you know, and I think when people want to show up, over time, you kind of begin to find an opportunity to use the gift that you have. If you lead with listening, then as time goes by, as the relationship deepens, I feel like we kind of get that whisper from God that, you know, hey, look, you have this experience. This could benefit them, or this is a way you could help them. But I think it starts with listening. What do you think, Ricky?
Well, like Steve said, you know, being in the program, we got an ending date.
Mm-hmm.
And at the ending date, you have to find your way, and it's pretty much like a cliff.
Mm-hmm.
And he's trying to help build a bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And he need more people, you know, mm-hmm. that got some input.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I mean, man, it's a beautiful thing when mm-hmm. when people from outside your circle that you think that you could never communicate with or mm-hmm. whatever, and they come
mm-hmm.
and it build a gap. Mm-hmm. It mend that gap,
mm-hmm.
you know, and we all walk together.
Yeah. And I think you've seen that too with the way that, you know, with Shane and Hunter, Shane has been like a catalyst at City Church, you know, for this kind of growing awareness, you know, and involvement in doing ministry with those that are unhoused, you know. So that's been, thank you. So that's been really, really cool to see how, you know, a lot of times I think our folks in our community, folks that are in recovery, they kind of come wondering like, Do I have anything to offer? You know, what could I possibly give? You know what I'm saying? They come from a like a lesser than sort of posture. What they don't realize is like the life and the spirit and the excitement and the fire that's in somebody like Shane, you know. Yeah. I mean he changes the atmosphere just by being there, you know, with the light that he shines and the experiences that he's had. And so it's like, no, you do have something to offer. Like you have experiences, you have wisdom. You know, I remember, I think the first time that Sky came to 117 with us, and we walked away from that, and he was like, man, he was like, those guys have so much wisdom. Like, they're so wise. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's because we've been through some things, you know, and sometimes we're wise about the things not to do, you know, because we stumbled a few times. But that's how you learn. That's how you learn. Well, let me take a minute since it's been a little while since we've announced this. If you didn't already know, this has come to the table. We're so grateful to be here with Ricky Mills and Leanne here in the studio. She's amazing to handle the phone calls for us and just to be a presence and support. So very grateful also to WEHC 90.7 and Wise FM 90.5 to just give a space to do something that I feel is really, really good work. This is a really cool thing that just sort of fell out of nowhere, that's become just a really great way to connect with people and touch people. You know, something that you brought up earlier, Ricky, that kind of on this kick now where I'm trying to focus a lot on rest and stillness and stopping. And if you know me, you know that that's swimming upstream for sure. And I got back into teaching some classes here in Abingdon, like boot camp workout classes at Body by Lee off exit 19 here in Abingdon, which is an awesome gym if anybody's looking. But when I started thinking, like one of my biggest struggles is rest, but I know like in fitness, in recovery, in faith, in life, like rest is something that just has to be really, really important. And it's something a lot of us neglect. You know, we think about, you know, nutrition, you think about activity, but a lot of us don't always think about rest. And so I'm trying to be a lot more mindful of that because I find myself needing to rest from all of the work instead of working from a place of rest. And so kind of trying to reclaim some of that restfulness. John Mark Comer writes a book called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. This is absolutely fantastic. And so the whole point of his book is recognizing that the hurriedness, the hurried spirit, is actually a serious detriment to a fulfilling life of faith because we feel like we're always late for something, you know, we got to rush, we got all this stuff to do. And so how to kind of slim that down. So how in the midst of your work with 117, you're now doing the peer support classes, you've got responsibilities with the opportunity program or the opportunity hall, you got, you know, stuff on Sunday and all the other things. How do you, what does rest look like for Ricky Mills?
when I get to the point where I feel like I'm pulled too many too many ways. I go back into my recovery, and I look back and I think when I was just walking around existing, and now I'm living, I'm living, and so then I go to my higher power, and he tell me that he got me. You know what I mean? Do not worry who I'm out of worry and take away a day from my life. And so I just sit down for a minute. And next thing I know, somebody or some thought will come along and it'll guide me through the rest of my day. And by me having my awareness up, I know where it came from. You know, because I sit down and I'm restless. I don't know which way to go next, how I'm gonna get this done. And when I go to the Word, and I say, God told me not the Word. You know what I mean? Who am I to Word? He take care of the birds, he take care of the bees. I'm his most prized possession. You know what I mean? I'm a prized possession, you know what I mean? I'm good. So I sit out for a minute, and I relax, and man, it worked. I mean, it works every time.
Yeah.
It works every time. Yeah. I give it to him, man. When I take it in my own hands, you know, I can't do it. But I know my higher power can. And, you know, I'm learning more and more how to be comfortable with giving it to him. My faith, you know. It ain't always where it need to be. But it gets stronger and stronger when I realize every time I go, I give it to him. You know, it come up, man. I mean, I can't even explain it, man. You know, but it's beautiful, man. You know,
it is.
It's good.
Yeah. There's a musician, his name is Arthur Benchet, and he says that music is made between the notes. So he argues that it's not the notes himself that make music music. He says it's the space between. And I think that's kind of a good way to approach a healthy life, you know, is when you think about, you know, preserving margin, you know, creating margin, you know. And I know in my schedule, I have to intentionally resist it. Like, it has to be something that I set out every week when I'm kind of lining up my calendar and I'm looking out at things. Of course, I take Mondays off, but after that, I've got to resist it. And I'm, you know, learning that to say no to something is sometimes a good thing.
Oh,
you know?
Boundaries, you know, is very important.
You know, because it's like if I don't have that margin and I don't have that space between, you know, I may be banging a lot of notes, but I'm not making music. You know what I mean? It's, you know, music is about rhythm and it's about flow and it's about cadence. I remember I got a drum set and it lasted for like a day, I think, before it mysteriously ended up in the trash can. And because I thought that it was just bang it as much as you can, as hard as you can, and that was music. And it was like, no, there's a rhythm to it. You know, there's a rhythm to it. And
you got to find that rhythm. Rhythm. You got to set some boundaries, because if not, it going to break the rhythm, you know. And, you know, sometimes you hate to say no, or, you know, because your heart is in it. You always want to help. But, you know, sometimes you might be getting in God's way, you know. And so you set them boundaries, man, and the more disciplined you become, the more you're able to help somebody. I can't help nobody if I ain't got, you know, my walk together, right? And it's surprising, man, how people pay attention to you, right? When you consistent, when you consistent about your walk.
That's right.
I had somebody say, look at me, and it was like, it was crazy. They look at me and say, you don't do nothing? I say, no, You don't even, smoke weed. I was like, nah. I'm laughing. They was like, well, how do you stay up so long?
How do you function? Moving?
I'm like, man, this is strange, because when I think about it, a question to myself is, how did I get to this point, because there was a time I never thought that I would be here. I never thought that I wouldn't, I would be setting examples, and I was to the point where, it won't no hope after dope.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to do my best to just get high. And I was just going to be the best at getting high and the best at corrupting myself and turning my temple down. Now I'm eating an avocado every day. It's getting stranger and stranger.
Every day. Stranger every day. No, it's a beautiful thing, man. It's a beautiful thing. And it's really cool how, I watch, look back at, when I first, first met you and where you are now, and to see, how just progressively, keep going back to the gym. But it's like, if you're, if your goal is to set out and, bench press 300, you don't start with that. You might just start with the bar, get some reps, get your form, your foundation, and then you may add a little bit. And then when you get comfortable there, you add a little bit more, and progressively you overload the muscle so it'll grow. And the same thing is true. I think when I look back at your recovery, at first you just had to learn how to get your stance right. At first you just had to learn to get the mechanics of it down. And then now, the load that you're carrying now, you look back at where you were at 2 years ago. And if somebody came to you from the future and said, hey, you're doing this and this and this and this and this, and you're going to be on a radio show once a month live with the coolest guy ever.
You're crazy.
A radio show about recovery.
You couldn't have sold me that one.
Sleeping in my car. What are you talking about?
I'm gonna keep it. You can't sell me that one.
Or that Dr. Seuss book, Oh, the Places You'll Go. Did you ever read that whenever you're a little kid? Yeah. It's unbelievable.
It is. But it's all good. Mm-hmm. It's all good. I'm helping people.
Mm-hmm.
That's the major thing.
It is.
I'm helping people. And it's always the fruits of my labor when somebody come and say, thanks, man, for, just little things, Thanks for taking the time out.
Yeah.
Thanks for pointing me in a direction, giving me a resource. Everything else, I just got that thing where I decided when a door open, I'm gonna walk in, and I'm gonna let God take it from there.
Does it still make you anxious to step through new doors and do new things? Is it as intimidating as maybe it once was?
It's not as intimidating as it was at first when I used to jump up in the church and tell my whole story.
Yeah.
And people be like, I knew you was going to jump up. Right. And I tell my story, but what made me feel better about it when somebody, an older person in the church, come to me and say I was going to give up on my grandson.
Yeah.
I was getting ready to just, do away with him, because I ain't thinking with no more hope. But hearing your story, I'm gonna keep them in my prayers.
Yeah.
So somebody prayed for me. My grandmother said, "Boy, you got a whole lot of prayers stacked up in heaven. you better, you got a whole lot of blessings stacked up. You better use them." So, telling my story, man.
What about new opportunities, like as far as, like leadership stuff or managing stuff or new roles? Does all that stuff, how do you?
I don't know. It's weird. It's like I was built for it.
Mm-hmm.
it's teaching me to be professional. I'm going to school. It's on and on. Like I say, responsibility. It's like I'm standing outside myself looking at a stranger. You know, and my life is getting better and better. You know, that addiction just ain't gonna cut it, man. You gotta take that step. You know, you gotta wonder what's on the other side. You can't give up. You know, it's a must that, because God don't make no junk. You know, but he give you your choices. You got the will to make your own choices. But to take that step, man, give yourself a chance, is what you owe yourself. You worth it. You know, so just take that step. You know, sometimes you got to drop everything because you can't help nobody until you help yourself.
Absolutely.
And
I think that's a good, kind of a good place as we get ready to wrap up here. And, you know, a lot of times we ask the question, you know, if you had 60 seconds left, what would you say to somebody, you know, that's still out there? And, man, I think what I'm hearing and what I'm sensing now is I just want to tell you that you're loved and that you are worthy. And that your past mistakes, your present decisions, your present situation, it doesn't define you.
No.
And that you are worthy of good things. You're worthy of love. You're worthy of a beautiful life that is immeasurably more than all you can ask or imagine. And so if anybody out there is needing some support, please know that we're here for you. We care for you. We love you. We mean that. We're not just something we say superficially, but coming from a place where we've been loved, we become loved so that others can feel that too. So friends, I want to thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Come to the Table. And Ricky, we hope that it has been an encouragement to your recovery and perhaps created in you a curiosity about what it means to live into a radical new mindset of selfless service to others. If you'd like to know more about our ministry or for coaching on how you can more faithfully walk with others in their time of need, would love to connect with you and pour into you. If you're interested in recovery resources or creating intentional spaces for recovery growth, spiritual growth, you can reach out to us at thetablebristol117@gmail.com. You do not have to walk this road alone. Hope and redemption, beauty from ashes, light from dark. Things are all so much closer than you know. Grace and peace to you, my friend. Have a great day.
Have a good one.